I want to start with a story, and all good stories start this way. Once upon a time, there was a man who was obsessed by money. He thought about it all day long, talked about it to anyone who was willing to listen, even dreamed about it at night. Now, this man was pretty well off, but he wanted a lot of things that he felt he couldn't afford. So he was restless and unhappy. One night he dreamed that if he went down to the river, the next day he would meet a monk who would be carrying a rock. The monk would give him the rock, and the man would find himself wealthy beyond his wildest imagination. In the morning, the man woke up excited, remembering his dream. So he raced down to the river, and sure enough, there sat a monk. "Do you have a rock for me?" the man asked. "As a matter of fact, I do," the monk said. "I found this a month ago, and I don't want to carry it around anymore. Here, you take it." The man was astonished. It was the biggest diamond he had ever seen. So he raced home with the diamond and hid it under his bed. "Now I'm really rich," he exulted. But over the next few days, the man constantly worried about the diamond, wondering if he had hidden it well enough. He couldn't sleep, even though the diamond was beneath him, afraid that someone would sneak in and steal his treasure in the night. He was more unsettled and more unhappy than ever before. Finally, days later, exhausted and practically paralyzed with anxiety, he returned to the river carrying the diamond. "Take it back," he pleaded with the monk. "It's not what I really want. What I want is something else you have, the ability to give away such a valuable and beautiful thing. For that, and only that, is true wealth." End of story. Now, that man discovered a priceless truth, that his attitude about prosperity was much more important than the things that represent prosperity. So in the midst of his breakdown, he had a real breakthrough, didn't he? That his thinking about the principles of prosperity could lead him to a true spiritual understanding of that principle. And that understanding, combined with a sense of gratitude, would create in him great peace of mind. Have you ever noticed that when people say, "It's not the money, it's the principle," what they really mean is, "It's the money"? But in Unity, however, it really is the principle. It's the principle of prosperity. This series that we're doing, Thriving, Not Just Surviving, is all about that principle. Now, prosperity can mean money, and there's nothing wrong with money. Prosperity means so much more, though. Good health, satisfying relationships, perfect employment, creative ideas, all the good that the universe holds in trust for us. And that good is in the form of substance. Reverend Nancy has been talking about substance for the first 2 weeks of this series, and we're going to mention it a little bit more in this piece too. But her basic point, as I understand it, is that we must change our consciousness about substance. And once we change our thinking about it, we can shape that substance into the things that we really need. See, that happened to the man in our opening story. He discovered in a conscious way that the possession of something, anything, cannot provide security or lasting wealth. It's not what you have, he discovered. His life was breaking down until he realized that true abundance lies not in getting, but in giving. That was his breakthrough. First, he was able to see the truth about prosperous living, and then he was able to set this truth in motion for himself. We can do this too. First, we can see things rightly, then we set them right through our words and actions. Now, this eight-part series that we're doing is the centerpiece to our fall program for this church, where almost 100 people are in small groups studying Unity's principle of prosperity as defined in this book, Spiritual Economics, by Unity minister and writer Eric Butterworth. Eric died a few years ago, but I am really grateful that he left us this book. And this book is subtitled The Principles and Process of True Prosperity. And this is what we're basing our entire eight-week program on. Now, Nancy felt, and I agree with her, that a thorough study of this book is the most timely subject that we could possibly offer at this time. And Eric's notion of seeing it right before trying to set it right is one of the most powerful ideas in the book. See it right first, then you can set it right. Now, you know what? Nancy and I agree that what we are being told by the media about our economy is about half the truth. For example, take the economic crisis. I think it's a time of great opportunity for those of us who can look beyond the sky is falling drumbeat that you hear from the media every day. A better way would be to use, I think, the law of visualization that Eric Butterworth talks about in his book, to see the economy differently. And we know with Eric that seeing is not believing, but that believing is seeing. He says, "You see things not as they are, but as you are. It is not settling on things as just the way they are," he says, "but visualizing them as they can be." So we all have a choice then. We can accept the recession as it appears to be, or we can visualize the economy as healthy and whole. Take your pick. I was thinking about this morning as I was going over this talk at home, and our unemployment rate in this country is steady at 9.1%. So that means that 91% of people have jobs. Take your pick. Which way do you want to think about that? Eric says that what we are seeing in the economy is the appearance of things. And I think that what we are reading and hearing about the economy is simply what our modern-day sage and our friend Wayne Dyer calls the good opinion of others. And I'm not very interested in the good opinion of others. Are you? Eric goes even farther. He goes even farther than rejecting that good opinion. He says you have the right and responsibility to put your own stamp of God consciousness upon everything you see and hear. What he's saying is when you turn on the TV or the radio or read a newspaper, for those two or three people who in this room who still read newspapers, just put your own stamp of God consciousness on what you're hearing and seeing. Simply put, if we allow the news as we know it to manipulate us, we are part of the problem. But if we look through the lens of truth, light, and love, we are part of the solution. I choose to stand in the flow of God's abundance. And here's, I want to give you an example of what that flow is like. This sanctuary has a rheostat control on all the lights in here. And when we turn the rheostat down, like Tim is about to do, thank you, we get less light. But when he turns it all the way up, as he is doing again, blessed him, we are just flooded with light. But you know what? The electricity that powers the light in this room is there all the time, whether the rheostat is turned down or up, isn't it? So in terms of the flow of abundance, your consciousness about it is the rheostat. Your consciousness determines how you perceive this flow. Now, a lower consciousness perceives it as darkness, a condition of lack and limitation. A higher consciousness, a different consciousness, sees light and opens the way to experiencing affluence everywhere. It's your consciousness that creates a breakthrough or a breakdown. Your consciousness that creates the breakthrough or the breakdown for you. And your consciousness has a great deal to do with faith, doesn't it? Jonathan and Becky just sang about that. Let me give you an example about faith. In the medieval world, medieval times, most people believed that the world was flat. Sort of like this piece of paper I have here. Most people believe this was flat. That was their experience. That was what they saw. That was the way they walked on the earth. They believed the world was flat. That's what they had faith in. Yet, despite that belief, and within that belief, was this truth. Was the world really flat, as everybody believed? No, it was round, as Magellan and Columbus proved. So is the economy really insufficient? No, it is not. There is always an all sufficiency, even within the insufficiency, Eric writes. Your faith can relate to the whole or to the partial. Your faith, notice he says your faith, can relate to the whole or to the partial. And he adds that it will be for you as you believe. So what's it going to be for you? The flat earth or the round one? If you are a flat earther in your beliefs about prosperity and the economy, that's where you are in consciousness. And lack and limitation is what shows up for you. But take heart. Eric writes, and I believe him, there is abundance for you right where you are, even as there is a round world within the flat world. Okay, Eric, if you say so. But how can we manifest this? By changing the way we think. Changing the way we think, despite evidence to the contrary and the good opinion of others. See, one of the five basic spiritual principles that we teach in Unity is that we are spiritual beings living in a limitless spiritual universe governed by spiritual law, open to the entire flow of that spiritual universe. That's one of the things we teach here in Unity. And when we can grasp that truth, really embody that truth for us, our lives change in amazing ways when we really get it. And that, says Eric Butterworth, means saying yes, yes to the universe. And then right after you say yes, say thank you, God. And really mean that, too. Because I believe that giving thanks is essential to achieving prosperity, eternal prosperity, because it helps keep us in the flow, helps keep us in an awareness of oneness with the divine flow. See, gratitude reminds us to turn up the rheostat. You don't have to do that again. Damn, it's already up. It helps us recenter ourselves in this awareness of the ever presence of substance, Eric writes in the book. I want to give you an example of that from the Bible. Talk about Jesus when he was faced with feeding the 5,000. And the Gospel of Luke has this master teacher that we call Jesus holding the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looking up to heaven and giving thanks. Now, I don't think that Jesus was looking up to God, because I think Jesus knew better than that. I don't think Jesus thought that God lived up there. No, I think he was turning away from the appearance of lack among the 5,000 and getting a view of the situation from the elevated consciousness of God. Not turning to God, but getting a view of the consciousness of God. He was seeing it right. See, Jesus knew there wasn't enough food, but what he also knew was that there was plenty of substance. Plenty of substance. Jesus knew that. So what did he do next? He blessed what was available, the loaves and the fishes that he had, the few loaves and fishes that he had. He blessed them. And the dictionary says blessing means to confer prosperity upon. And then he had the food distributed to the people in such abundance that there were 12 baskets left over. And that's emphasized in the Bible. So it means that there was plenty. 5,000, enough for 5,000 and 12 baskets left over. See, Jesus didn't see lack in this situation, and everybody was fed. Now, that's often cited as one of Jesus' miracles. But was it really a miracle? Or was it actually the outworking of a spiritual law, higher spiritual law, that provides the round earth of truth within the flat earth that we see? See, I suspect that the loaves and fishes miracle was the outworking of higher laws that we just hadn't attained knowledge of yet, but that Jesus did. Jesus was able to tap into that at that time. It could be sort of like the replicator in Star Trek, where you can get stuff made out of nothing. Maybe not. Anyway, consider this idea. Did the law of aerodynamics exist in the universe before the Wright brothers discovered it and used it to make flying machines? Yes, it did. The law of aerodynamics was there just waiting for someone to come along and discover it. Now, we didn't know about it before then. I think that's an example. Jesus knew about stuff that we don't know, we still don't know about. Just because humans were not using the law does not mean it wasn't there. So in the same way, perhaps the act of giving thanks, the actual act of gratitude, is a necessary element of achieving prosperity. Just because we don't believe it doesn't mean it isn't true. I think Jesus was trying to tell us that when he was blessing the loaves and fishes. Think about it. Just think about it. And if you don't believe me, maybe you'll believe somebody else, someone a little more well-known than I am. So in winding up this talk, I want to share this from a speech that this person once gave, and the first part of the speech is your assignment for the week. It's going to come in a minute. Yeah, there it is. Keep a grateful journal. Every night, list 5 things that happened this day that you are grateful for. That was the opening part of the talk that this person gave. What it will begin to do, this person says, is change your perspective of your day and your life. If you can learn to focus on what you have, you will always see that the universe is abundant, and you will have more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never have enough. Now, I don't know about you, but I think it is a very good idea to pay attention to what Oprah Winfrey says about prosperity. Because Oprah really walks that talk, doesn't she? So today, I want to end this lesson by reminding you to thrive, not just survive. And I want to close by conferring prosperity upon you this way. God bless you. And here comes the gratitude part. Thank you very much.